welcome back to another episode with your internet historians. I'm Nicole.
I'm Lisa.
And I'm Alec.
How y'all doing today?
Doing good.
Doing all right. Tired.
Yeah. So you got back yesterday, Alec?
No, I got back Friday.
Okay.
But today we spent the day up at the DMV.
Oh, yeah. You did say that.
Yeah, we went to two separate DMVs today because we made an appointment. And they were like, oh, you can't do all of your business because the appointment's under his name, not yours. You have to make a separate appointment.
Oh my God.
While we were standing there at the counter, I made an appointment for a different DMV, like across town later that day.
Yeah.
It's like, fine.
That's annoying.
Yeah. I'm just glad that I was able to get, you know, a same day appointment. Yeah. So we just get it done with, cause we had to register the cars and get new plates. So it was,
what was it for? But I forget. You have to change your stuff like that when you move to a whole other state.
Yeah. And they like just at the beginning of in October, they opened up standby appointments because the appointments have been, you know, months out. So I was just like, I'm going to get pulled over every single day. I drive my car. I'm just like, oh my God, I have California plates and my registration is so expired. But JC assured me, he's just like, they know that it's way too hard to get an appointment at the DMV right now. So yeah.
Damn. Well, I'm glad it's over with, right?
Me too.
Yeah.
Now I feel better.
Yeah. I was like, I hate shit like that where it's just like, I don't know, just tedious kind of. And then when you're done, you're like, okay, cool. Don't got to worry about it no more.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Let me tell you the story real fast. Okay.
Okay.
I'll try to be fast. So yesterday was Tuesday, right? Yeah. And then so Monday, So Monday night I was closing at my store. And so literally 15 minutes before we're closing, these group of teenagers who have come into our store before and stolen stuff, they came in, but I was like in the office area, which is like right down the hall to where like the store is at. And so I'm sitting in the office and then I hear like voices talking, like kind of like by where the entrance is to the hall to like where like the break room and all that stuff is. So I'm like, who the hell is that talking, right? And so then I like poke my head around like the little like thing to see who's like talking. And I was like, oh, it was just some kids, like whatever. And so then I like kind of like stop and I was like, wait a second. I was like, I recognize one of those kids because he's the boyfriend of the girl that has stolen before.
Ooh.
So I'm just like staring at them just like the whole time, like just out, like down the hall, just staring, and they don't even notice that I'm staring or anything. But then they walk out and I'm like kind of like listening to see if I hear like the little sensor thing go off, and it does. So I don't know if you guys know, my hip has been hurting this like past freaking almost month now. And so I've been like kind of just trying to take it easy at work and stuff, cause whenever I do too much, it like aggravates it or whatever. But when I don't, it's like fine. Anyways, so I literally bolted from my seat and ran all the way down the hall and like after like the kids or whatever. And so I'm like, and then the lady who was at the register, she's like, they like whatever, they stole something. And I was like, yeah, I know. Like whatever, just go back to what you're doing. And so then I like, well, cause she was trying to tell him to come back. She's like, come back. But she has like a really soft voice. Like she's an older woman. And so she's like, come back. I'm like, okay, you sound like Rose on the freaking thing.
I was just going to say,
yeah. Come back. But then I go out there. And so, cause you know, I recognize the girl too. And cause it was her, some other girl that I haven't seen before. And then two guys, and the one of them was her boyfriend. And then I don't know who the other one is. And so I like go out there and I was like, you guys need to come back. Like hella like stern with them, you know? And they're like, what, why? And I was like, because the sensor came out and I needed like went off when you guys left and I need to check your guys's bags. And then she was like, hold up, she's like, I'm not letting you check my bag, that's just weird. And I was like, okay, well the sensor went off and so I need to check your shit. And I was like, and I know you've stolen before, so I definitely need to check out your guys's bag.
Dang.
And then she's like I don't know, we didn't steal. And I was like, okay, I was like, well, you know, I need to see a bag, like show me one of your guys's bags. And but of course it was like adrenaline was going, so I didn't even know what like to do really in the situation. I just was like, and usually I just check people's bags, but there was, and so when I started doing it, I was like, then the door, like the sliding door, like kind of shut behind me. And I was like, this is probably not safe for me to be out here with like four people, two are dudes and like whatever, and like by myself, you know? And so then I was like kind of checking his bag, but then I was like, okay, I don't know what the fuck I'm even like looking for, you know? And so then I'm like, and the girl's like just giving me attitude, talking hella shit or whatever the whole time. And then I'm just like, do you even have military ID? Even though I knew she did. And then I was, cause like, I've helped her before and stuff like that in the store. And so I was like, do you even have military ID? And then she was like, yeah, I do actually. And I was like, okay, well then let me see it. And then she gave me her ID and then I looked for her sponsor's name on her ID or whatever. And so then I saw her sponsor's name and then I gave it back. She's like, are you satisfied now? And so I gave it back to her and I was like, yeah, I am. And I was like, you know what? I was like, go, you guys can go ahead and leave. I was like, but I know you've stolen before and I know you guys stole tonight. I was like, cause we got you on camera first of all too. And so I was like, so do not come back to the store. And I was like, oh, and we're going to contact your sponsor. And then I just turn around and like walk back into the store. And then she was like, whatever, you fucking whore, whatever. And I'm just like, oh, whatever, girl. Like, you're the one with hickeys all over your neck. So who's mom,
who are you? Right? How old were these children?
I don't know. They're like teenagers. Like, they in pretty frequently. Like, the teenagers around that area, oh my God, they're freaking demon children. Okay. Cause they're always stealing in the store. They're always say,
what'd they steal last time?
Well, she stole a drink with another friend before. And they usually steal like little things like drinks or candy and stuff like that, which is whatever, but it's like after a while it adds up. But this time she stole like a whole bunch of makeup because we have like a little makeup section.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. So then she was pissed, I guess, because after I said that and I walked in, she came back into the store and like knocked over all of our hand baskets or whatever. And then I'm like, okay, whatever. You're just upset because your gig is up now, bitch. And so I was so, my like blood was boiling. And so then people were like, oh, did you do this? Did you do that? And I'm like, you guys, in the moment, like, you don't like it, like everything you're supposed to do, like goes out the window, like your mind is just blank, you know? And I was just surprised. I thought to even ask for her ID, and then her dumbass showed it to me. And so, yeah. So I emailed our like LP people and I was like, you know, this is the sponsor's name, blah, blah, blah. And I guess they like turned it over to the CMC or whatever to like, I guess, contact them or something. But who knows if that's even going to happen.
Do you guys check ID at the door?
No, they check it at the register.
Only when you buy stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. We wish if we had enough manpower, shit, I'd be like, that's when you come at the door.
Yeah. Cause then every time you see her ID, you'd be like, nope, you're not allowed in here.
For real. But I mean, we all kind of recognize her. So that's, I'm just like, what the fuck? But yeah, she's trying to give me hella attitude, my girl. And like, the thing is, there's like drama with this girl anyways, cause in the community Facebook page or whatever, I'm not in it, Chase is in it, but like, I've also heard it from a coworker cause she lives in the same neighborhood. And she was saying how like that girl is always missing. Like, she's always like running off with her boyfriend and her family doesn't know where she's at. And so I was like, she already has issues or whatever. So I'm like, who knows if anything's going to actually come from it. Cause clearly like all these teenagers that are like the ruckus makers, all their parents let them like stay out until 10 o'clock at night. And they don't even like care. Like, and we talked to a kid who knows them. He doesn't really hang out with them.
I'm like, 10 o'clock isn't that late.
But I mean, for teenagers and like their parents don't check in on them or care what they're doing. Like, they're gone all day.
I don't know, because I know that like when I was in high school, most of my friends, their curfew was midnight.
Oh my God.
Mine was like 6 o'clock. I had much stricter.
I don't think
parents,
I had a curfew, but I was never out like that late.
Like, and then are their parents going to stay up till midnight waiting for them to come home? Like, that's just annoying. I would want to go to bed.
But like, their parents like, are never even like care about them. Cause at first we would kind of like, if they were just buying a drink or something, we would let them buy it without like checking their ID. But like, now we're like, okay, you guys are fucking causing us trouble. So every single time you better have an ID, even if it's like a candy bar, you know? And so we check, and if they don't, then we just tell them we can't serve them. And they like, so they can leave. But like, they will literally like destroy the store, like knock everything like over the store, like all over the place. And I'm just like, something needs to happen.
Yeah. You can't ban them for like causing.
That's what I asked my boss. I was like, if we see them, can we tell them they can't shop? And he was like, well, no. It's because he wants the money for the store. So he's being stupid. But I'm like, they're stealing. So what the hell?
Yeah. They're taking I mean, there are like stores that have big issues with that, and they make kids leave their bags up front.
We do. Like, we do.
Oh, you do?
But the thing is, that night, you know, like I said, I was in the office. The lady who was at the front, she said that she got like bad vibes from them, and she asked them, oh, like, you guys need to leave your bags up here at the front. But they just ignored her and like kept like walking in or whatever. And so, and I told her, I was like, girl, if that happens, we need to call somebody up there to help you, because I will literally walk over to them and be like, hey, like, because I've done that before with like, all of us have done that before, like the people that are like actually doing things, like some of the old, because we have a lot of older ladies there. So they don't really like confront people. They just like stand back, and like all the younger ones were like, hey, you guys need to like go over, like I'll like constantly walk up to them, and like, we'll just be staring at kids when they're like in there and stuff, and like in the aisles. Cause one time some girl was like, had her backpack open and was like putting something in there. And I was like, what are you doing or whatever? And then she's like, oh, I'm putting my binder in there. Cause it was a binder. Cause I was like looking, I was like, what? And I was like, okay, well, you need to leave your backpack up front. Like, you can't be having it in the store. And then she's like, oh. And I'm like, oh my God. But it's so, and all these kids are freaking crazy. It's like insanity. I hate them all. And we all, like, everyone in the store hates them whenever they come in. It's just a nuisance.
Is your store like within like walking distance to like housing?
Yeah. We're like in the middle of all the housing. Yeah. That's like,
dang, no wonder.
Yeah.
Yeah. Our next is like straight across the intersection from the first, the main gate of the base, but it's like there's nothing over there. Like, literally like water.
I don't know, because I think it happens at not like necessarily the stuff we deal with, but I know like theft happened, like even at the main exchanges that are like behind the gates where you have to have ID to come in. They're constantly getting like theft and stuff like that, and people in freaking uniform will be stealing and stuff, and they're like, that's always awkward, because then they call military police on them. and they're all in uniform and shit. And it's like, ooh, that's awk.
Yikes.
But yeah. Anyway, so that was my eventful, like literally the last 15 minutes of my shift. And I was just like, all like, no, on Monday.
On Monday. Okay.
And so I was like, I came home and I was like, I need a beer after that. I was like, that was some intense stuff for me to handle, like literally the last thing right before I left. But anyways, yeah, that was the eventfulness of it. But how was your vacation, Alec? Your cruise.
It was good. It was nice. It was nice to just like not have internet for the whole week to just like not think about work or posting for work. And like, I put on auto reply on Etsy and I was just like, I'm just like, not even like, don't talk to me. So it was nice. We went to the Bahamas. We didn't end up getting off at Nassau or anything, because we were kind of sketched about their COVID situation that they got there. So we only got off at Disney's private island.
How was it on like the ship or whatever, with like, were people wearing masks or was it just like all
if you were inside the ship and not like on an outdoor deck or whatever, like at the upper decks, you had to have a mask on, except for when you're eating in the restaurants, and then in your own stateroom, you can take it off. Before we even could get on the ship, they checked vaccine status and did a rapid test like right there. And you had to sit out in this tent until your results came back. So nice, yeah. Okay. But we felt safe about it. I mean, they were cleaning and
it was like,
yeah. But yeah, it was good. We almost saw Eternals. They did a midnight showing of Eternals, but it was of course at midnight, and we had to get up at like 7 the next day to get off the ship. So I was like, nah, like I'm just like way too tired for this. But
yeah,
I'm trying to think if anything super eventful happened. We came in second in a Marvel trivia.
Hey.
Did a lot of alcohol tastings, like a beer tasting, a champagne tasting, made friends with the bartender, went snorkeling and saw a submarine.
Nice.
But yeah, we just chilled. It was a lot of naps.
Yeah.
For
sure. Yeah, you're just relaxing, you know, your vacation.
Yeah, and now we're going back down there next week to see you.
I was just thinking that. I was like, she's really went on this little cruise, and then like a week later basically is you're going to Disney World. So
yeah, JC hates me so much right now, but he's like I know I have to go on this trip, because if I don't, Nicole and Chase will hate me forever.
We wouldn't hate him forever,
because he's like bailed the past two times we tried to get together.
That was like at this like summertime with me and Chase, like we had like trip after trip after trip, and he like was over it at the end. He's like, dude, he's like, no more trips this soon. And then like this one is like our last one for a while. So
yeah, that's what we were talking about today in the DMV. I'm just like, well, this is gonna be the last one for a while. He's like, until March, which I completely forgot. We got reservations for the new Star Wars Galactic Star Cruiser hotel for his 30th birthday in March. So because he's telling me, he's like, I'm Disneyed out. I'm just like, you can't be Disneyed out and be married to me. I'm sorry.
I love how he's like, until March. It's like, March isn't that close, you know?
And it's his trip too. So yeah. Like,
okay, well, shall we get into this then?
Yeah.
Okay. So in today's episode, we will be discussing the history behind the movie Changeling. In 1928, Los Angeles, single mother Christine Collins arrives home to find her son Walter gone. 5 months later, her prayers are answered when Walter is found in Illinois. But to Christine's horror, the boy who steps off the train is not her son. Authorities vehemently dispute Christine's claim, and her one ally is a clergyman who sees the case as his chance to expose corruption in the Los Angeles Police Department and government. So what'd you guys think about the film?
I hated it in a good way.
Okay. I'll give you that. Okay.
Because
you were like, I already knew you're going to hate it.
Yeah, I was waiting.
Because it's like just so cringy the whole time.
Really? Cringy?
Everything's true.
How
she was treated, how she was put in the insane asylum, how they were like test out the boy. So I thought that Sanford, he overacted a little bit.
I feel like he always does, doesn't he? Was that the clergyman dude?
No,
that's the kid.
The kid. I was like, Because I feel like that clergyman dude does kind of
John Malkovich. Is that his name? Something Malkovich?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
I like him, actually.
I mean, but sometimes like in, sorry, in what is it? Bird Box? I feel like he was a bit much in that movie. That's why I say that. In
Bird Box?
Yeah. Wasn't he?
Who was he in Bird Box? Wait, was Bird Box?
He was a neighbor, or like one of the dudes, and he was like, didn't want to help anybody, basically.
With Sandra Bullock, that yeah. movie?
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Yeah, that was shot where I'm from.
Oh. Yeah, so I thought of it like that. I mean, it's very like a 2008 movie, right? It came out 2008, right?
I don't yes. remember.
2000 something. But I don't know about you guys. The thing about that movie is that after that movie came out, that hat, you know, that bowl-shaped mm-hmm. hat, dude, everyone and their mom at my town like wore that hat. That hat was like selling out like crazy at Target. I just remember that was like the most popular look at the time after that movie came out. And I was just kind of like, it just triggered me a little bit when I saw the movie, her in that hat. I was like, oh my God, that time in my life. So I remember that. And then, oh, and then I had to look up what changeling meant because I remember when the movie came out and that was the title, I thought maybe like Christina, I was looking at Christine and I was going to say Christina Aguilera. I meant Angelina Jolie. I thought that this it had something to do with her name, kind of like when the movie Salt, because like I think the character's name is Salt or something like that.
Yeah.
But then like at the end of the movie, I just realized, I was like, wait a minute, what does changeling mean? Like, what the heck? So I think it's something about like a kid getting kidnapped by fairies or something like that.
Yeah, it's another name based off of folklore of fairies, trolls, sometimes the devil taking children and replacing them with another child who will either die from disease or be just a general difficult child, and then that child that they took will be like their slave.
Well, that kid was exactly like a changeling then, because she was saying like he was difficult and shit like that too, right? Like, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, so kind of, yeah, then when you look up the definition, you're like, oh, yeah. Okay, I get it. All right. So enough about me. Everybody else?
I liked it. I enjoy it. It is very, like, sad, especially considering that it's based on a real story. And, yeah, like, just everything about it. And, like, it's very just, like, how, like, they say, like, when women show, like, emotion, they, like, basically label them as crazy or anything like that. I'm like, this is totally that. Like, they're just like, you're crazy or whatever, let me put you in an insane asylum because of that.
Yeah, I liked it as much as you can like it. I mean, it, yeah, it definitely was hard to watch in some points, and I was making a lot of faces and making angry comments towards the police captain, etc. But overall, it's a good movie. And I was actually kind of surprised to learn that Clint Eastwood, who directed and wrote it, he produced and directed. He also did the music for it. He's also a composer for it. And I was like, wow, talented cowboy.
Isn't it weird that Clint Eastwood was also like the mayor of Santa Cruz at one point?
Oh my God, what?
I think so. I think Scott, you guys know his son, right?
Yeah.
Scott like talked about living in Santa Cruz at one point. I think that point was when Clint Eastwood was the mayor or some sort of something in politics at the time in Santa. I'm pretty sure it's Santa Cruz. So just super random fact.
One thing that pissed me off though about this movie was just like in general, like not about the movie itself, but like the characters. Well, yeah, yeah, that's what I mean. Like the guy that ended up being the murderer or whatever, like his death or whatever.
We saw it.
Well, that. And like, I just was irritated that he was so like scared, but I'm like, dude, you were over here killing kids and you're over here like fucking crying like a freaking goddamn baby about dying. I mean, obviously that's a scary thing to die, but it's like, I don't know. It was just very like, I don't know, just weird to me that he was like acting that way when he like took people's lives, you know, all the time. I don't know. I was just like, son of a bitch, like fucking take that shit.
I think that they should have casted someone younger because I think he was only 23 when he was hung. So I felt like the guy who played him was a little too old. Maybe if we showed like a younger, like almost like a kid, you know.
I don't really agree, because actually when I saw an actual photo of him, they looked really similar. I was just like, dang, that's a good cat. I thought so, at least from the photo I saw. I was looking at a lot of newspaper articles. I dove deep into the LA Times and I read every article that they put out for this investigation.
Every article.
They aren't that long, the columns.
I was gonna say, because this
but it was a lot.
Like, I was like, dedication while. Over here.
Yeah. Well, it was, I mean, when I get to my section, it was just like, it was kind of hard to find stuff, really.
Yeah, about, same.
Like, what all they did to test this kid. So,
I know. I was like, I'm gonna have a little bit of stuff, but like, I'm also kind of not that upset about it because I want to eat after this. So I'm like, it'll be fine. It
okay, like, well, my part's long, so I apologize.
Oh, shit. Okay. Okay, well, I guess let's get started then so okay. we can get through it. So let me go ahead and talk a little bit about Christine Collins and kind of just, I mean, I said timeline of the events, but I mean, I don't actually have like December 10th or anything. I just kind of like list the order of things that happened. So Christine Collins was a single mother living in California. She was also a manager of a telephone company, and she married Walter J. Collins, an ex-convict using an alias who was born Walter Joseph Anson. Who he had hid his past from her. Cause I was curious about the dad. I was like, who did, yeah. did she was her dad. And yeah, so obviously they had Walter on September 1918. During the events of Walter's disappearance, his father was serving time in prison. Walter went missing on March 10th, 1928. Christine had sent him to the movies and he did not return from the theater. She searched for him for hours to no avail, and then she reported him missing to the police, but nothing came of it. During this time, Christine was convinced her son's disappearance was an act of retribution against the child's father. As I said already, he was serving time in prison, specifically for armed robbery. I guess he was just a con man and a robber, which also, side note, some of the stuff that I got was from, I guess, BuzzFeed Unsolved. They did it. I was like, I was reading an article and the article put their video on there. I was like, ooh, let me watch this. And then I was like, but yeah, so she thought it was someone out to get her, or I guess her husband, you know, taking it out on their kid. Yeah. So 5 months later, the police claimed to have found Walter. Christine and the boy exchanged letters and photographs, and she finally agreed to pay for the boy's ticket to come to her because he was in Illinois. Once she got the boy, however, she realized it was not him. She tried to let authorities know. I feel like I'm just reiterating what happened to the movie right now. Because I feel like the movie is pretty like, actually, I feel like it's pretty like accurate in how they
I agree.
Like the, you know, like the main bullet points, I guess you can say, of everything that happened.
Yeah, I mean, the writer took it straight from the files, the case files. So a lot of stuff is verbatim from the testimonies.
Wasn't it something like LAPD was like getting rid of files and then he got his hands on that one?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Yep.
Wow. I know, it's crazy.
Yeah,
like,
it was gonna be chances. Destroyed.
Wow. Yeah. You guys come with all the good like facts, like history bits of it.
I don't know about you, but all the kids look the same to me in the movie.
Oh my
God. Oh, right. Oh my gosh. Yeah. I had to look up pictures of Walter and Walter. Cause I'm just like, is this the same actor? Am I tripping? Like, but maybe that's what they wanted you to
I was
going to
say, like, yes. I was like, I think they did that on purpose because, but the thing is, have you looked at pictures of like the actual Walter and the kids?
Yes.
But yeah. I feel like, I mean, like I can see how, I guess they resemble, but it's like, I can tell them apart when I look at them. I feel like their eyes and stuff are like kind of shaped differently and stuff like that. But
no, I was gonna say, like, when I looked up the pictures of Walter and fake Walter, I thought they did look similar. But in the movie, I think it's just that we only see like a little bit of Walter and then we see the new kid and kind of like, and they like they're dressed the same. You're like,
Well, and I think also just because like the hair and like they're all have dark hair, and then like, I don't know, just the style like that everyone had, and like, they all look the same. Okay. So once she got the boy, she realized it wasn't him, and she tried to let authorities know it wasn't him, but they blamed her for trying to neglect her motherly duties. So she, you know, cared for the boy for like 3 weeks. And finally she was just like, okay, guys, this is enough. Like, he is not my kid. And so then she went, you know, like at the scene where she's kind of like going to all these people, like, will you help me and whatever. So basically that, I mean, that also did pretty much happen, but she had like all the dental records and had like teachers and friends kind of vouch for her and support her and saying like, this isn't her kid. Like, you know, I'm like, they're like, yeah, this isn't him.
I feel like the dental records are like just the 100% proof that that's not the real Walter.
I guess too, with the dental records, it was saying, I think he had like feelings. Yeah. So I guess Walter had like feelings in his teeth, and then the new Walter, the fake Walter, he had like no dental work done on his teeth. So like, yeah, obviously that's not him. Also the boy, he was an inch shorter than Walter, which again, shown in the movie. So she told police, yes, he looks like Walter. And in some ways he acts, this is exactly what I got from BuzzFeed too, by the way. When I was typing, I was like laughing to myself. So yeah, she said, yes, he looks like Walter. And in some ways he acts like my son, but still I'm not certain about it. You see, Walter was quiet and well-behaved. He always called me mother. This child calls me ma, and at times he is hard to handle. I certainly hope he is my son, but somehow I can't bring myself to believe it. Which I'm like, yeah, you would know if that's your son or not. I know. And like when at the BuzzFeed video too, they were just like laughing at the fact that like she had him for 3 whole weeks before she's like, okay, this isn't my son. But I'm like, no, like she knew from the jump that
yeah, the very first thing she said was, this is yeah, not my son.
Exactly. And like, I don't know, some of the things how they were saying it, I was like, okay, yeah, I think obviously they're trying to like make it more interesting for their video. But I was like, okay, that's not entirely true how you're reporting it. But yeah, so she knew from the jump that that wasn't her kid. And I didn't see anything about a birthmark or anything like that, that she, because wasn't it a birthmark also that yeah, she realized? Yeah, or too. He was circumcised. I didn't see that, or the kid.
Yeah, I didn't see any of that, but yeah, that's what yeah, was in the movie.
I think they were just trying to add that to like,
didn't they have like a handwriting expert?
I'll get to that.
Oh, okay.
Well, go ahead, Alec, because that is all I got.
All right. So then I apologize if I reiterate some of the stuff that you said, because you did touch on a lot of stuff, but I also have like expanded versions of what
that
you said.
Yeah, I was so, like, I feel like that was going to happen. So I was trying not to go too like overlap, but yeah.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about the LAPD involvement. Love them. Cops. They're
like,
great.
What is with these movies though too? And I feel like always it's something with the LAPD. Like what the hell?
They shady. They're yeah, notoriously shady, apparently.
I lightweight like hated that guy's accent. Like I was like,
which guy's accent?
The
Captain?
The dude.
JJ.
I forgot his name, the one who committed her
yeah,
to the
assignment.
Yeah, Captain JJ Jones. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like it's so funny. JC like walked into the room while I was watching. He's like, oh hey, that's Burn Notice. And I'm just like, no one has ever seen Burn Notice.
I've seen it. I like that movie.
Have you? It's a show.
Yeah. Oh, wasn't there a movie called Burn
I've
Notice
heard of
with
it.
Brad Pitt?
No, that's a Burn is... After Reading.
Oh, okay. Never mind.
No, it's a
I was
TV
like,
show.
Yeah, Malkovich was in that movie too.
No, that's a Burn After Reading. Yeah, I'm like, well, he's a jerk in this movie and he was a jerk in the other movie that we watched. Just like he just is playing all these jerks. So yeah, a lot of the stuff that I got was from the LA Times, which they mentioned a few, like the reporters were very involved and they mentioned a few times, you know, the LA Times and their hand in all of this. So I did get a lot because they had all their articles up on their website from the 20s. So I'm like, all right, wow, I'm gonna read these.
That's crazy, but it's cool.
Yeah. So the Los Angeles Police Department was already under investigation for several corruption scandals, and their inability to locate Walter Collins was rather embarrassing. The police chief, James Davis, was under a lot of pressure to solve the case. The police looked along Lincoln Park Lake, but were unable to find anything. Collins' father thought former prison inmates were responsible for his son's disappearance in an attempt to get revenge. He worked at the prison's cafeteria and was responsible for reporting other inmates' infractions. With that sort of job, it's possible that he made more than a few enemies.
I was gonna say, didn't they also, there was another missing boy that they didn't find, so that's why Walter's case was like so blown up, because this
I think
is
it
like
was
the
a
second
girl, wasn't it?
Oh, it was a girl.
I don't know, whatever, but yeah, there's a missing kid,
a missing
yeah,
child, no,
whatever.
Yeah. No, not like that.
Oh my goodness.
I mean, yes, I just meant the gender isn't
yes,
really
correct,
important. Yeah.
Correct.
Just yeah. Well, that's why, but yeah, that's why there's so much pressure on the LAPD, because this is like the second child gone missing and they couldn't find the first one.
Yeah,
this probably isn't the second one. This is probably like a lot more. This is just the publicized ones.
Yeah,
yeah. Definitely. And then it was kind of like what John Malkovich's character, the Reverend, was saying. It was just like the cops had their hands in a lot of shady stuff and were very clearly getting paid off from you know, alcohol smuggling and all that other mm-hmm, stuff. So, yikes. So in August 1928, Illinois police picked up a boy who told them his name was Arthur Kent. At first, he would say only that his father abandoned him, so they placed him with a temporary family. Eventually, he told them that his real name was Walter Collins from Los Angeles and that he had been avoiding their questions to protect his father. Illinois police contacted California police, sent photographs of the boy, and later sent him to Los Angeles. California authorities contacted Christine Collins and showed her the photos of her son. She immediately said that he was not her son. However, Captain J.J. Jones talked her into trying out the boy for a while. These two are straight from the LA Times in 1928. So this is an excerpt of article titled "Kidnap Collins Lad Returns to Mother's Arms Suffering from Severe Hardships." "I do not think that is my boy," were the first words uttered by Mrs. Collins as she was brought face to face with the lad in juvenile hall yesterday. And Mrs. Collins maintained this attitude for a long time while she and the youth and captain of Detectives Jones talked together. But as the question and answers proceeded, and the boy from time to time, as he became puzzled, I should have preferenced this. There's so many run-on sentences. I don't know if that's just the way people talk then, but
I was going to ask you if it was, a little bit hard to read because of like the difference and how they spoke then.
Yeah, I was just like, this is a new sentence. This is not like, I was just like, what is happening here? So from time to time, as he became puzzled, he put his left thumb in his mouth, a trick that had been persisted in by Walter since babyhood. Mrs. Collins gradually became convinced because of this. There was no doubt in Walter's mind about his mother's identity, nor of that of a friend who accompanied her and who he had frequently seen before he was kidnapped. But the boy was very hesitant in his speech and clearly revealed impeded mental processes, which were not his habit before his experience. Arrangements were being made yesterday to place the youngster in a sanatorium, for it is believed that only through complete rest and proper environment can he be brought back to a normal condition. So they were kind of going to put him away to like bring him back into society, which makes zero sense. Like putting someone in a sanatorium is not going to help.
You know what I think is kind of shady is that they made Christine pay for his trip from Illinois to California.
Yeah, that I thought that was really weird too. And yeah, it's, but I mean, I guess if you're desperate enough, like, and you really want your kid back, that you're going to do it. But it's just like,
but I mean, that's kind of like the same thing when people put rewards for like missing people too. Like the families are the ones who gather that money for that. So I don't know.
Yeah. So this excerpt is titled "Weird Angles Have Come Up." The boy, returned by his mother to the police as not being her son, was questioned by Captain Jones and Detective Lieutenant Hickey, and he recognized a watch that was given to the Collins boy by Mr. and Mrs. Bates, who says the real Collins boy had not seen the watch since long before his kidnapping. The youngster was not asked about the watch, but the detective held it in his hands as he talked to him. His attention attracted by the glint of the metal, the boy said, "That looks like my watch. It is my watch." This identification, police claim, verifies the boy's identity and refutes the statement of the Clark boy that Walter Collins had been killed by young Northcott at the death farm. The Clark boy, on the other hand, identified pictures out of a group of 30 different boys of Walter Collins and the two Winslow boys of the three victims of the asserted slayer. So they're like, really? Like this
watch.
It's just like, oh yeah, that watch is mine.
It just makes me.
That's him.
It makes me think about like, you know, psychic readers or like, you know, those fortune tellers and how they'll kind of just like say something and the other people will be like, oh my God, she's totally like, or he or she is like totally right because, blah, blah, blah. And you're like, and then, but, you know, other people are like, she just took a good guess.
Yeah. But not even that too. I feel like the police or whatever must have been kind of like encouraging him to answer in certain ways or whatever so he could get, you know, the right answers and whatnot. So I'm like,
definitely. So this other info I got from the Crime Museum, which is located in DC, which I, from the amount of times that I've been to DC, I actually have not gone to the Crime Museum, but it sounds cool. I might check it out soon. So 3 weeks after their reunion, Christine Collins brought the boy back to the police station. She brought with her Walter's dental records and signed statements from people who knew Walter, saying that this boy was not him. Captain Jones called her a lunatic and claimed she was trying to get the state to take care of her child and believed she was just trying to embarrass the police department. According to court testimony, he told her, "What are you trying to do? Make fools of us all? Or are you trying to shirk your duty as a mother and have the state provide for your son? You are the most cruel-hearted woman I've ever known." This guy is a real piece of work.
I hated that the whole time because he, you know, he was like saying that in the movie and it just like bugged the crap out of me that he just, it's like, here, this is how I'm gonna, you know, combat this, is that calling you a shitty mom.
I was just saying, I just feel like he was trying to like, I don't know, like not do his job. So he, I mean, obviously that is what he's doing, but it's like not even just about like, oh, like, we don't want to be embarrassed, but it's like seemed like he just didn't want to deal with it at all. So he's like, this is your kid. Let's just case close. Stop it.
Yeah. Whatever. It's like he's accusing her of not wanting to be a mother. And it's just like, well, you don't want to be a cop because clearly you're not doing your job.
Seriously.
Like, what the heck? And like that one part where he was like, oh, you know, you got to have your time running around without a son.
Oh,
and now that you got
your
son back, you don't like it. It's just like, what even, dude? Like
that's why she was
kids.
Calling and everything on your guys' asses to try even find him. Yeah, that's totally why.
Yeah, really. He threw her into a psychiatric ward in Los Angeles County General Hospital on a code 12, which allowed police to get rid of troublemakers by throwing them into psychiatric hospitals.
That just sounds terrible.
I'll get into it. The Los Angeles Police Department initially continued to insist that Christine Collins had her son. They only discontinued this belief when a handwriting expert came in to analyze their writing styles. The expert concluded that this boy's handwriting was definitely not a match to the samples collected from previous years. The strange R's the boy used was commonly taught in Illinois, but not in California. Hmm. So the asylum. So it was pretty difficult to find really anything about her time in the asylum. Like, I have a couple quotes from the testimonies when she later sued the city over it. But so I was kind of curious if the portrayal in the movie is actually what the asylums were like at the time. So I have some info on that, which is fun, fun stuff. So Collins testified that Jones told her, "You're insane and ought to be in the madhouse. You're under arrest and I'm going to send you to a psychopathic ward." Jones threw Collins in the psych ward, i.e. the insane asylum, where she remained for about a week. At the time, it was very easy for the police to throw anyone they didn't like into the asylum for causing problems, says the writer of the movie, Straczynski. That's how you say that name, Straczynski. They did it more with women than men. The reality is, if Christine had been a single dad, this would have never happened. Meanwhile, under police questioning, the child who had been returned to Collins admitted that he was actually Arthur Hutchins, a 12-year-old runaway from Illinois, who had pretended to be Walter because he wanted to go to Los Angeles to see cowboy star Tom Mix. What a piece of crap. I'm sorry, but this child, like, I'm annoyed.
It sucks, but it's a very childlike thing to do.
Oh, yeah, 100%, yeah. 100%. Oh, this is another article from 19 or excerpt from 1928 titled "Mrs. Collins Accuses Jones." Mrs. Collins declared before entering the grand jury room that Captain Jones berated and abused her when she brought the boy back and said he is not her son. She says, quote, "When I insisted that he's not my boy because of identification marks on his body, Captain Jones announced that he was going to send me to the psychopathic ward for observation. I was forced to remain there from the 8th to the 13th. Dr. M.D. Steele of the General Hospital also was called before the grand jury to state his observations of Mrs. Collins' mental condition, and Captain Jones appeared and denied the charges made by Mrs. Collins." So, of course, got his freaking, also, like, round of applause, which I'm glad they gave him a round of applause of for her lawyer, because, oh, man, he was going for Jones, and it, like, is good. It was a good scene. Felt good. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, totally. So let's dive in a little bit here to the history of these asylums. So I got some of this info from a paper from the University of Wisconsin, Time Magazine, and it just sounds like a party. So, lunacy in the 19th century, women's admission to asylums in the United States of America. So yeah. Women face many instances when their normal bodily functions, actions, or interests as women were considered abnormal or a symptom of insanity. Between the years of 1850 and 1900, women were placed in mental institutions for behaving in ways male society did not agree. Women during this time period had minimal rights, even concerning their own mental health. Examples are the status of women concerning their roles in marriage and employment. Women's roles in these areas were minimal and concrete, leading to a second-rate position in society compared to men. Quote, "It must be admitted then that there are causes acting unfavorably upon the chances of insanity among women, the existence of which may be said to be native to the sex." And that's from a paper in 1864. So, considered less important than men, women had few rights. Important life decisions, including admittance to an asylum, were decided by a husband, brother, or male friend. Anybody. Occasionally, men's societal expectations of how women should act did not coincide with how some women acted. The symptoms qualifying a woman's need for admittance during these times would be considered controversial in present day. Symptoms such as depression after the death of a loved one, use of abusive language, and suppressed menstruation, meaning the lack of a menstrual cycle, would not be accepted as reasons for admittance to a mental institution today. But, you know, didn't get your period. Bye-bye.
Isn't that like, kind of also weird? Similar to, like, you know, like the whole, like, Salem witch trials. Isn't that, like, I mean, like, I guess not similar, but, like, they, like, thought, like, basically back in those days, if women or whatever were acting in a certain way, they accused them of being witches or whatever.
Because, yeah, definitely. That was a little earlier, but yeah.
It was like
didn't way change back much in like 300 years, you know, still the same. So not only were the symptoms controversial according to today's practices, but the diagnosis diagnoses resulting from the symptoms were also only during this time period. Oh, that was written weird. Diagnoses such as epilepsy and nymphomania were not looked at as diseases, but as bouts of insanity. Women were also diagnosed with insanity when they exhibited symptoms of overexertion. The female patients were understood as being tired and not insane, considering the expected duties of women's and the daily struggles of the 19th century. So it's just kind of like, if you were just like a tired and aloof, and it was kind of like what they,
that's me every day then.
Yeah, it's kind of like what her friend, quote unquote, in the asylum was saying. It's like, you can't not have feeling, because then, you know, you're also have issues, because it's just like, you can't be too happy. You can't be too sad. You can't, you know, so the admissions process for new asylum patients was often profoundly dehumanizing. Patients were forced to strip naked in front of staff and be subjected to a public bath. After being searched and having their possessions searched, patients would be forced to submit to a physical examination and blood testing, including a syphilis test. One woman who stayed for 10 days undercover was Nellie Bly. Patients would be subjected to interviews and mental tests, which Nellie Bly reported included being accused of taking drugs. At her commission hearing, the doctor noted her pupils enlarged for nearsightedness and accused her of taking belladonna. This was used against her for the goal of committing her. So she was just like trying to go undercover to write what the heck was going on. And they just like made
something up.
Yep, made something up. You're off. Goodbye.
What's belladonna?
I believe it was an herb or a plant at the time. Uh-huh. And I can't remember if it has like whatever. Uh-huh. But women took it to like make their eyes shiny and like just like sparkly, pretty much. Like it's another one of those like cosmetic things that could kill you, but you care too much what you look like. Yeah. So many women were committed along, there was another woman, sorry, I need to preface this. There was another woman, Elizabeth, I cannot remember her last name, but she was committed by her husband because they ended up having religious differences. I guess he was a pastor and he did not agree with how she felt about it. So he sent her away. So once she got out, she actually appealed it and won. The court decided, just like, oh, because you guys have religious differences, that's not a thing to be committed for. So luckily she did get out and lived on to write about her time there. So there was a lot of stuff that I was reading was her firsthand accounts of what it was like. So many women were committed alongside Elizabeth that the hospital was overcrowded, with 231 patients squeezed into its 8 wards and another 240 patients on the waiting list. Luckily, chloroform were particularly effective on boisterous women and therefore used to quiet them, in doctors' words, not only temporarily, but permanently. Many asylum superintendents thought restraints such as straitjackets rarely necessary among males, yet it was standard for disobedient women to be constrained. Wow. And if drugs and straitjackets didn't work, there was always surgery.
What?
Which I feel like they kind of briefly mentioned by that woman that like wheeled by that had this half shaved head. It's like, she had a lobotomy recently. That's
I was going to say, I'm always interested with lobotomies. Like, why? Like, cause you know, in that one movie Sucker Punch, how they like did it through the nose or whatever. Is that like how they do that?
Yes.
Or through the eye or whatever, I think it was, or I forget.
Yeah. I believe like, yeah. I don't know which one was first. There's also My Favorite Murder episode on it. But I think it started through the eye, but then they found out that they could do it through the nose, which was like less invasive. But yeah, they would like stick like a long rod up there and poke around. Poke around until you'd stop talking, pretty much. God,
that's terrible.
Pretty horrifying. So contemporary medical notes reveal that a 20-year-old woman who spent much time in serious reading and a 30-year-old wife who dared express great distaste for her husband were among those subjected to the latest treatment to cure female insanity. I'll try to say this the best I can, a clitorectomy. The theory
like in Handmaid's Tale.
Sexual organs caused her madness, so cutting off her clitoris would calm her. Doctors claimed a 70% success rate. Other treatments of the era included removal of the ovaries, the injection of ice water inside intimate orifices, and the application of leeches and caustics to the genitals.
God.
Yay. Fun stuff. Patients could also find no privacy inside the asylums. Patients were routinely stripped and checked for diseases with no consideration for their privacy, as I mentioned. Patients were at all times viewed more as prisoners than sick people in need of aid. Patients were kept in small sleeping rooms at night that often slept as many as 10 people. Mealtimes were also taken communally in large dining areas. Bathing was often seen as a form of treatment and would be conducted by staff in an open area with multiple patients being treated at once. Despite being grand and massive facilities, the inside of state-run asylums were overcrowded. Thanks to the relative ease of involuntary committing someone, asylums were full soon after opening their doors. Viewing the mentally ill and otherwise committed as prisoners more than patients also led to a general disinterest in their well-being. The culmination of these factors was cramming countless patients into small rooms at every turn. At an Oregon facility, sleeping rooms were only 7 feet by 14 feet, with as many as 10 people being forced to sleep in each room. Nellie Bly described sleeping with 10 other women in a tiny room at a New York institution. Patients were often confined to these rooms for long hours, with dumb waiters delivering food and necessities to patients to ensure they couldn't escape. While the facades and grounds of the state-run asylums were often beautiful and grand, the insides reflected how the society of the era viewed the mentally ill. The interiors were bleak, squalid, and overcrowded. The beauty and grandeur of the facilities were very clearly meant for the joy of the taxpayers and tourists, not these condemned to live within. So that's just an idea. Even though she was only there for a week, what, you know, other women who were thrown in there just because, you know, they upset the police once, you know, or were, you know, a prostitute like her friend, what they were subjected to. Just because they were women and
had controlled emotions.
By men.
For real.
So it was kind of hard to find exactly what changed after the events, after the court trials. They did mention there were words at the end. they did mention kind of briefly that both the police captain and chief were let go, even though I saw later in my research that the chief did come back on later. The captain, I don't think, did, JJ, but the chief did, which is annoying, which, I mean, I don't know. I guess I have mixed feelings because it wasn't entirely his fault. It definitely was JJ's fault.
But it's still his responsibility to oversee.
Yeah. And then, as mentioned in the movie, the mayor at the time did not seek re-election. So... The boy eventually told the truth. He admitted several other aliases as well. He said he had decided to try to pass off as Walter Collins when someone had mentioned he looked like the missing boy. Arthur Hutchins, 12 years old, had assumed Collins' identity in an attempt to go to Hollywood, as I mentioned. His stepmother picked him up in Los Angeles and took him back to their Illinois home. That was a weird interaction. The woman that came and picked him up, I'm just like, are you really even his mom? Like, for some reason, part of me felt like they were just giving him to another woman.
It didn't seem like he even wanted to go to her. He was kind of just like, And then also too, like, I don't know, just because, like, you know, in the film, how he was with like some dude or his dad or whoever the hell it was. I'm just, I don't know. Just the whole thing is just weird. Like, I'm like, were they actually together or were, like, you know, I'm just, or were they just like hanging out? I don't know. It's just the whole, the whole thing is just odd.
It's awkward too, because it sounds like he didn't come from like a great home, and Christine could have provided him with a really great place. And it's kind of, you have this moment where you're like, well, you know, I would want like this kid to succeed. I mean, it's, you know, it would be nice for him to be in a better home. But, you know,
he
also did. Exactly.
She doesn't deserve this child because he sucks.
Just a better home, but not Christine's.
Well, she doesn't want another kid. She wants her kid, you know?
Exactly.
He didn't appear to have any remorse for his actions and said Christine must have known he wasn't her son, so it was just a big game for them both. Shortly after Arthur Hutchins went home, Christine was released from the institution. After her release, she sued the police department twice, winning the second lawsuit. Although Captain Jones was ordered to pay her $10,800, he never did. Of course. A city council welfare hearing recommended that Jones and Chief of Police James E. Davis leave their posts, but both were later reinstated. Sorry, I thought it was only one of them. The California State Legislature later made it illegal for the police to commit someone to a psychiatric facility without a warrant. Christine sued for false imprisonment, and 1,000 furious citizens attended a hearing about the Collins case before the city council's health and welfare committee. Giant speakers had to be hung from outside of city hall to accommodate the overflow crowds, which they did show in the movie. And I thought that was really interesting. So to see that that was a real thing that they did, and I was like, cool, that's convenient. Undoubtedly, the public's fascination was stoked by the radio preacher, Breglib. He has such a German name, who loved to rail not only against LAPD corruption, but also other salacious topics of the day, such as film star Fatty Arbuckle's rape trial and sex in the movies. Christine Collins, then the writer of the movie goes on to say, everybody around her had an agenda. The police had an agenda. The reverend had an agenda. The only clear voice in the entire thing was her voice saying, "Where is my son?" That's all I had. Okay. A lot, but I had.
Interesting. Okay. So next we're going to be learning about the chicken coop murders. And, you know, the whole thing with the guy, the murderer dude. So yeah. What was his name again?
Where was her
something
son?
Northcott. Yeah. What the hell happened? What was his name? Northcott.
Gordon Northcott.
Gordon Northcott. So yeah, we're going to learn about all that stuff right after this short ad break.
Welcome back. I'm going to talk about the murders. So let me just set the scene for you guys. So here are our main characters. It's Gordon Stewart Northcott, his mother, Sarah Louise Northcott, and our supporting characters are Sanford Clark and Jesse Clark. So Gordon was born and raised in Canada and then moved to LA in 1924. In 1926, at the age of 19, he asked his dad if his dad could purchase a plot of land so that Gordon could build a chicken ranch. So his dad did it, you know, and they built the ranch, and Sanford, Gordon's nephew, helped build the house and ranch. So Gordon was like, "Hey, can you stay?" And Sanford's parents agreed to let him stay. And once it was just Gordon, his mom, and Sanford, that's when Gordon started physically and sexually abusing Sanford. So in 1928, Sanford's mom, Jessie, you know, she was suspecting that something wasn't quite right. So she went over there to visit all of them. And that's when Sanford told her everything, how he feared for his life, the murders of 4 boys at the ranch. And Jessie, that later she went back to Canada and informed the American consul about the crimes. And then they wrote a letter to the LAPD, and the LAPD then contacted the United States Immigration Services because there was also an immigration issue. So they just wanted to get some facts straight. So then on August 31st, 1928, 2 Immigration Services inspectors went to visit the ranch and took Sanford into custody. Gordon saw the agents come up the road and told Sanford to stall them or else he would shoot Sanford with a rifle. And then Gordon and his mom booked it, and Sanford stalled them for 2 hours before he felt safe enough to spill the beans. So I started kind of with that information just because if Jesse never visited Sanford and then went to the American consul, honestly, they would have never gotten caught. That's what I believe, because they had no suspicions of Gordon kidnapping these boys until basically this happened. So Sanford told them about the murder of 3 young boys and a Mexican young man who Sanford had to help dispose of the head by burning it in the middle of the night in a fire pit. The authorities found 3 shallow graves at the ranch exactly where Sanford stated that they were, and the graves didn't contain complete bodies, only parts. They later found out that Gordon and Sarah dug up the graves and moved the bodies or what they could get and took the bodies to a deserted area where they most likely burned them in the middle of the night. They were never recovered. The evidence found in the graves consisted of 51 parts of human anatomy. With that evidence, they concluded that Walter and the 2 brothers were murdered there. It's suspected that Gordon may have killed as many as 20 boys, but the state of California couldn't produce enough evidence to support that speculation. Gordon and his mother, Sarah, fled to Canada, but they were arrested in British Columbia on September 19th, 1928. Sarah confessed and pleaded guilty to murdering Walter Collins, so she didn't have to go on trial, but Sanford did testify at her sentencing that she helped Gordon kidnap, molest, beat, and kill 3 young boys. Sarah was sentenced to life imprisonment, sparing her the death penalty because she was a woman. So there's that. It's like,
everything sucks. The one time a woman should be mistreated.
I know. I was like, I wanted her to die.
Yes. Oh, it's disgusting that she helped her son do all of this. Yeah, and that's the one thing that the film didn't get, is that, you know, Sarah helped out.
Did you also have that she may not be his mom?
Yeah. So I said that
another one of those situations.
She claimed that her son was innocent, and she had like a million and two other, she like had a million and two different stories. She's a storyteller. She said that, his father was an Englishman, and then, that actually he's a child of incest from his father and sister. And Gordon was sexually abused by the entire family. And actually they didn't kill Walter. So I don't, she just had a lot of things to say. So the state chose not to prosecute Gordon for Walter's murder, since Sarah had already confessed to it and went to jail for it. They chose to prosecute him for the young Mexican man and the two brothers. Gordon was found guilty and was given the death sentence. So, I mean, I don't know what else to say other than that. There's not much to it. Gordon did some sick things. Unfortunately, we can't really go into much detail, because obviously at that time they really couldn't produce much evidence. All they could really produce was just the body parts.
I was gonna say about the ends, or one of the end, more towards the end scene where Christine goes to the prison to talk to him or whatever. So that happened to where he wrote her saying come over and I'll confess basically to you,
and then he goes there
and I'm like, what the I'm like, what a freaking little bitch.
Yeah, that's where they did it right, because he was like, I'll confess. And then he later just was like, never mind, I'm not confessing, I'm innocent.
He was just trying to was he trying to make it so it would be further for him to die? Or he was trying to delay it or whatever?
Like Ted Bundy?
Yeah, I was like, was that what he was probably trying to do?
That's kind of what I was assuming.
Mm-hmm. I think it was a little bit of that and a little bit of his conscience. The heaven thing. Yeah, I think so. Yeah. But I think that
he ain't got a conscience, okay?
Yeah, I know. But Christine was clearly, what she took from it was that Gordon was just insane and that maybe Walter wasn't one of his victims. So was Walter ever found? The short answer is no. The long answer is still no.
Oh my God. The long answer is N-O.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh my God, I feel terrible laughing at that though.
Well, I know, but I mean, it's...
He could have lived.
He could. Okay. Know. Let me say this. First of all, this is 1928. So this happens. If a boy runs away, you don't know if you're ever going to see them again, because there's no cell phones, right? And there's only snail mail, and that's only if it gets there. So I don't know. Maybe, but.
And I didn't look into it, but assuming that it was true, considering everything else in this movie was true, but about that one kid that did come back.
Yeah, that is true. So yes, it says that Christine wanted to believe that Walter was alive because Gordon never confessed to murdering him. And there was a boy who showed up 5 years after escaping Gordon's chicken ranch. He was reported missing 7 years earlier. So Christine wanted to believe that maybe Walter had escaped as well. So yeah.
Did he say that Walter was there though, like in the movie, or no?
No, it was, he confirmed that he was at the chicken ranch, but
they see him.
So the one thing is that the police did believe that Walter was one of Gordon's victims, because they found some pieces of fabric that matched the clothes that Walter was wearing the night he disappeared. I mean, yeah, that was like the one thing that they had.
But they all wore the same shit.
I was going to say the same thing. Like, I don't think that's really anything.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's like a little piece of clothing. I don't know. Yeah. I'm like... I get it. I get how that is like, I don't know. That's not really evidence, but they really couldn't produce that much. And
so, I don't know. I'm like, I feel like, cause I mean, I don't know.
If you're asking me, I do think Walter was one of the victims.
Yeah. So I was like, I'm trying to think, cause I mean, there's the only,
I mean, the odds were against him.
Exactly. Yeah. So, and Christine
what's his name? Nephew or whatever. Did he say, he did say that he chose out Walter, right? In one of the photos?
Yes.
Right. Okay. Yeah. And then he probably was. As terrible as that is. Cause I mean, I don't know. But then that one kid was for 7 years. He didn't go home, or,
5 years.
Yeah. And that kid, years. Right. Yes. He was reported missing seven years ago, what he came up 5 years after, I think, the Gordon case happened.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
So, but he wasn't like somebody I think Sanford pointed out as being somebody. So that was also why Christine was like, maybe, because look, he made a mistake there, you know? So I don't know. But Sanford, I don't know if you guys looked into him. It looks like he just went to like a school.
Oh, I did see something
like a school for troubled kids. And he was out early because he, you know, showed that he made improvements.
Actually, I guess, wanted to change.
Yeah. Yeah. But did you say that he never reproduced because he was like, I don't want to basically continue the bloodline because like we obviously this family has issues and I don't want to like bring those issues. I thought
he did have kids.
I thought so too.
Oh, maybe I'm looking.
Yeah, I thought he had 2 kids.
Let me see. Hold on.
Oh, well, then never mind. Who did I read about then?
Maybe at the time. That's what he said. And then maybe.
Because I don't know what age. Because I remember I thought someone, unless I must, maybe I read something else then about someone else. Completely different person.
Yeah, I don't actually, you know what, I have no idea if he had kids or not, because it looks like after his like went to that school, they pretty much don't have any other information about him other than they think he died in 1991.
Huh. Okay, well, because if this is true I don't know if this is true than what I read, but I thought I read something where they were like interviewing him and they like, I don't know, basically somehow that topic was, you know, they started on that topic and he said that he would never because of like the mental health issues that all of his family has. And he doesn't want to like potentially like transfer that onto like a new, you know, a kid, but I don't know. Maybe I read something that wasn't,
you know,
the thing.
What's
so
her
don't
name?
Know.
Sarah Silverman, the comedian. She says the same thing. She doesn't want to have kids because she has like depression and I think something else. And she's like, I don't want to have a kid and have them inherit that. So it's a very common, you know, thing. Mm-hmm. And he could have said the same thing.
But I mean, if he didn't have any kids, then good on him, because I think they don't need anyone else in that family. That family sounds like it was messed up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know who else I wanted to, I mean, I guess like I was curious about the Reverend a little bit.
Oh yeah.
Definitely we didn't have time to look him up, but I like that he did not stand for the corruption that was happening. And he was like,
thought it was kind of an interesting stance to have for a reverend to have. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I thought that was kind of interesting because it was just like, I feel like most often, you know, churches are, I don't know, I wouldn't say like
a part of the corruption,
but but I wouldn't say that, you know, a reverend would be the one that's like fighting the head of the police type of a thing, but you know,
but
they
are
anti-corruption, so they're looking for the injustice.
He also had his own like motive for doing it too, so I think he saw that as a way to like go after them or whatever. Sure. Yeah, at first I was like, he's just using that, but then towards the end it seemed like he was kind of like feeling, you know, obviously feeling for her and whatnot. But yeah, I think
the fact that he got that lawyer for her and he was doing it for free and he had already, you know, won against the city and was a dang good lawyer, at least he was in the movie.
No, yeah, for sure.
That says something.
Anything else, guys? Okay.
I mean, should we I don't know if you want to, do we want to mention, I mean, since this is our season finale, do we want to mention any movies we're watching for next season, just as a little teaser?
No.
I think we have a couple listed.
We do, but I guess I didn't know if they were for sure, and I just put it there. Oh, but one movie I did want us to look into was, because it was on the TV yesterday at work, Unbroken. That movie Unbroken, where it's like the guy, the Olympic guy, he was prisoner of war or something like that. And
okay, I thought you were talking about the girl who got raped and then nobody believed her.
No.
That's,
I'm pretty sure it's called Unbroken. Maybe it's another movie, but it's about this guy. He was in the Olympics and he joined the war or whatever. And then he was like a prisoner of war. And then it's like him in the like war camp or whatever the heck with, I think it's Japan. I don't want to be wrong, but I think
concentration camp.
No, it wasn't. Camp? No, it was like a, I don't know. They were Asian. So he was Japan, I'm assuming. I don't know. I don't really don't know.
Asian, but they were put into concentration camps too, technically.
No. This guy was
he was put
in America, so it was like that.
Oh,
he's American, put into a camp somewhere in Asia.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah,
so that like North Korea, but he wouldn't.
Maybe I honestly do not remember.
I watched like a little bit about, you remember those the reporters who were in the prison camps for in North Korea? Like I looked into that a little bit because I was just like, what the heck? And that was just, yeah. If I don't think he could get out of a prison camp from North Korea. Like,
but no, I don't think they were like I don't think he escaped. I think there was like they were released or something. I don't know.
No,
well, even we'll then, find out.
Yeah, we'll find out in the movie because I haven't watched it in like.
Yeah, we don't know anything time. Clearly.
But okay, yeah. So yeah, so that one, Erin Brockovich, The Last Emperor, Elizabeth. Are we gonna do Elizabeth finally? We kept pushing it down.
Yeah. Oh, dang.
And then Everest.
Yeah, is that Everest. The one with Jake Gyllenhaal.
I think. Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I don't know if I want to watch it because I think it's so sad. It sounds like the saddest movie ever.
Oh, we can do the other one where the guy was in the boulder with James.
127 hours. Yeah.
Oh god, that also sounds so like cringy.
I'm like trying to think what else.
Yeah, there's a lot of movies out there.
Yeah, I mean, there's like, more, there's no... but I just we don't have them all listed.
You know what's so funny is that when I was at work yesterday, I was talking to this guy and his daughter. It went to like. Boston University and she's in Boston and she's studying journalism and he was like, I don't know if she's gonna come back or stay over there. And I was like, well, the Boston Globe is over there. And he's like, that's true. And I was like, yeah, Spotlight. He's like, yeah, Spotlight.
Yeah, Spotlight. Yeah, shout out to Spotlight.
Yeah. You're funny. I know things.
Oh my goodness.
Okay, well, thanks for joining us this week on the Internet Historians and for this season. Yeah, the season of the Internet Historians. Hope you enjoyed the episode. Make sure to follow us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and give us a rating. And we would love to connect with you. So make sure you follow us on Instagram and subscribe to us on YouTube. So yeah, thanks again for tuning in. And we will see you next season, everybody.
I was like, bye. Is it next year? I think it'll be next
year. Oh, yeah, I guess
year.
Next year, technically. Yeah,
I think
next
it
year.
Is, yeah. We're going to take our holiday break.
Yeah.
Okay, bye.
All right. Bye.
Bye.